You didn't die just recently. You died some time ago. Although your body stayed a while and didn't really know. For you got Alzheimer's. You failed to comprehend. Your body went on living, but your mind had to reach its end. So we've already said goodbye to the person that we knew. The person that we truly loved, the person that was you. And so we meet again today to toast your body's end. For it was true and faithful until right at the end. And now when we remember, we'll think of all the rest. We'll concentrate on earlier and remember all the best. For in the real scheme of things, your illness wasn't long compared to all the happiness you brought your whole life long. We think of you as yesterday when you were fit and well. And when we're asked about you, it's those things we'll tell. And so we meet in remembrance of a mind so fit and true. We're here to pay our last respects, to say that we love you. The poem was written by Richard Underwood in 2010, but it could have been written by my family as well as some of yours. As you know, 53 days ago, I had my mother's funeral service and placed her ashes in the ground in her hometown of Red Springs. I'm grateful for all the expressions of kindness and support you have shown Sandra and I in the death of both of our mothers. As I repeatedly said, it's hard to be sad for my mother because we lost her years previous. Most of us are more anxious about losing our minds than losing any feature of our physical health. How many times have you heard it said or said yourself that any kind of physical impairment is more tolerable than the loss of one's mental abilities? Alzheimer's can afflict an otherwise healthy person at any age. It brings tragic, progressive mental and physical impairment. When one loses their memory and their memories, they begin a downward spiral of losing what is most distinct about them. The disease leaves one feeling lost, left without a past, the present, or the ability to see the future. One feels and one is lost. Many of you have witnessed this disease up close and personal. And many of you will be forced to face it in the future. Just this past week, Time Magazine has done a feature on Alzheimer's. In the earlier years, Sandra and I became the caregivers for my mother. The problem for us and for untold families battling this disease or other diseases is that the disease often sets the rules of engagement, manifesting itself in different ways as the brain it inhabits. And looking back, I would probably say that it was about 4 years ago that I began to lose my mother. The person I knew and loved was just not present any longer. It was then that I began a grieving process and realized that what we once had was gone. So when death came, it was a welcome guest for me and my family, and certainly, without a doubt, it was a welcome guest for my mother. This past year, long before my mother's death, have begun another intentional period in my life of letting go. As I previously shared, I've been praying and praying about this decision to retire. In many respects, I'm letting go of the only career, vocation, and job that I've ever had. I'm also letting go of a church that I have loved and been part of all these years. Just like the pain and struggle with my mother and her disease, I have been going through that same process and anguish in many ways with my decision to make this change in my life. And just like the loss of my mother, I recognize the loss of leaving this place and you, whom I've grown to love and appreciate and walk hand in hand with. For you see, the relationship with my mother changed from me just being the son to the caretaker and the one responsible to make decisions. And as that relationship with her changed, my relationship, your relationship, our relationship with this church will have to change as well. It will be different. The love will still be present because we are part of a family. The beautiful building, which for 29 years I've worked to maintain its beauty along with you. It's not the church. It's the family of believers. It's the family of God who worships together in this building and in this place. We often turn to the psalmist for comfort and strength and direction. The psalm for this lectionary reading today is Psalm 27. The psalmist writes, "One thing I seek, to live in the presence of the Lord all the days of my life and to dwell and behold the beauty of God." The psalm was thought to be written by King David. The great king wanted to dwell in the house of the Lord, in the temple, in the sanctuary, all the days of his life. And he wanted to behold the beauty of God. But we have the benefit of the New Testament. And we come to realize in our walk with God that God is not confined to living in a house of worship, not confined to a temple or a sanctuary. The beauty of God goes way beyond a physical building. And some have translated Psalm 27:4 this way. One thing I seek, to live in the presence of the Lord all the days of my life and to behold God's beauty. That is the one thing I need, that you need, that the world around us needs. To live in the very presence of God all the days of our lives and to see God's beauty, to hear God's beauty, to smell God's beauty, to taste God's beauty, and to touch God's beauty. For the beauty of the Lord is all around us in many, many forms. Many do attribute the psalm to King David. Others are not sure, but most believe it was written by a king. And you basically have in this one psalm, really two psalms, almost halfway through, the first part being the first six verses, you have a psalm of joyful trust. A lot is happening. A lot of positive things are going on. But in the second part, verses 7 through 14, there's more of a lament, a more of a grieving, a more of a sorrowful time. The first section. The familiar words describe God's care for us in three ways: light, salvation, and stronghold. And you know well that light is an appropriate means of talking about God. How often have we sat in this darkness in the sanctuary when the one light was lit and then our candles are lit? Darkness has always conjured those hidden threats, fears, enemies, evil. But light comes and dispels the darkness, and we have the assurance that God is present and with us. Salvation renders a Hebrew word that primarily means deliverance. And in this context, it probably refers to a warrior facing dreaded enemies with confidence that God will grant victory no matter what the odds. And the third word, stronghold, might also be translated refuge, a place of such security that the psalmist would portray himself as fearless against all enemies, against all dangers. Simply saying, of whom shall I be afraid? And we might add, even what shall we be afraid? The psalmist makes reference to seeking and living in the house of the Lord. I ask you, as I ask myself, who of us throughout our lives have yearned for that time and that space when the church meant so much to us as we face difficult or uncertain times? Death, heartache, suffering, or pain. But it also got me thinking that I hope and pray that for my mother and for others who are dealing and have dealt with Alzheimer's, that even with the loss of memory, there was still somehow that space that allowed for the dwelling of God. Dwelling in the house of the Lord, and that they felt that and sensed that. Indeed, our hope. We might also recall the experiences of worship and fellowship in this church and other places. But what is really needed and recall for us is to know and to feel that the presence of Christ is not in a place, but wherever we are. And that is always the good news, especially in Lent and Easter. As we encounter one another in the halls, in the city, we often ask, how was your day? There's a story told of a mother who, as she tucks her children into bed each night, their teeth had been brushed, their hair still damp from the bathtub, and she asked them this question: where did you meet God today? Where did you meet God today? And is that not our fundamental question for all of us each and every day that we live? In the second section of this psalm, things change. God's presence seemed distant, even gone. The psalmist feels abandoned by the same God who once had seemed so close. I witness in the eyes of my mother that sense of lostness, that sense of abandonment. It breaks your heart. But we hear and we feel and we need to see, as we talk about the beauty of God in the first part, we need to see the face of God. Whatever's happening, the prayer and the cry is for God to be present in the end, and the psalmist writes these hopeful words of assurance. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. In life, we too will have those moments and those times when we must pause, when we must stop, when we must wait. In the days ahead as a church, as one of your ministers, the psalmist may just be reminding us both that these days and times require a disciplined rhythm to discover the places where we can encounter the very presence of God. They're all around us, and they await to be discovered. I can, and you can, recall those defining times when the call of God came, and all we could utter were words, "Here am I, O God, here am I." But life is full of times where we are uncertain about the very presence and the will of God, and other times we cry out asking if there is a God, and if so, what would you have us do? Even Jesus the Christ on the cross cried out. We too cry out. Tony Campolo shares a story that he heard, and I'd like to share it this morning. The story goes about a deacon in a church who didn't want to do the deacon kind of things, or as he called, he didn't deek. Got that? He didn't just do what he was supposed to do as a deacon. But one day, it was said to the deacon that there was a group of young people. They go to the nursing home, the old folks' home, and they put on a worship service once a month. And surely, you can drive them to the old folks' home. The deacon agreed. The first Sunday, the deacon was at the old folks' home. He was in the back with arms folded. All the kids were up doing their thing up front. And all of a sudden, someone started tugging at him, tugging his arm. He looked down, and there was an old man in a wheelchair. He took hold of the old man's hand, and the old man held his hand the entire service. The next month, the same thing was repeated. The man in the wheelchair came and held the hand of the deacon. The next month, and the next month. Then the old man wasn't there. The deacon inquired and told, "Oh, he's down the hall, right-hand side, third door on the right. He's dying. He's unconscious. But if you want to go down there and pray over his body, that'll be all right." The deacon went, and there were tubes and wires hanging all over the place. The deacon took the man's hand and prayed that God would receive the man, that God would bring this man from this life into the next and give him eternal blessings. As soon as he finished the prayer, the old man squeezed the deacon's hand, and the deacon knew that he had heard him. He was so moved that tears began to run down his cheeks. He stumbled out of the room, and he bumps into a lady. She says, "He's been waiting for you. He said he didn't want to die until he had the chance to hold the hand of Jesus one more time." The deacon was amazed at this. He said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, my father would say that once a month, Jesus came to this place. He would take my hand and he would hold my hand for a whole hour. I don't want to die until I have the chance to hold the hand of Jesus one more time." The calling of God is to do what Jesus would do if Jesus were in your place. Whatever that looks like. I thank God for you and all the ways through your ministry and mission you have been the face to me and to this community and beyond. We are all called. We are all called to imitate Jesus, and it is the Christ who says to us, "If you are faithful in the little things, then you will be master over the great things." So you see, it's rather simple. Doing what Jesus would do, we become Jesus for people by showing to them the good news that God is the one who extends to all unconditional love. A God who forgives. A God who believes in each of us. And that is the beauty of God that we smell, we taste, and we see. And that the psalmist reminds us of. Throughout my ministry and in caring for my mother, I realized that our struggles, those hard times, are part of what helped to make us. And I also realized that it is more about asking, where did you meet God today, than not just how was your day. It's about being the face of Jesus. It's about being the church, the body of Christ, for others in this time and space that God has allowed us to be. In the family of God, we are called to be church to one another. Ultimately, to find church, there are several things we need to do. First of all, we need to look into a mirror. To look into a mirror as a way to begin. And then to begin to ask ourselves individually and collectively as the body of Christ, the church, do we see there reflected an instrument of peace? Are those eyes sensitive to the world's injustice and inequality that is all around us? Are those ears able to hear the unspoken needs of a neighborhood child? Or a mother with Alzheimer's? Or maybe a church that needs your help? Is there a heart in that view of the mirror able to provide strength and capable of demonstrating love in concrete and practical ways in a community and world that needs to know the love of Christ? If so, it's easy. We must reach out to each other, remembering that where two or three are together in His name, the church happens, and it happens day in and day out. So as we continue our journey, we will do as the psalmist writes. We will wait for the Lord. But the psalm also invites us to pray, to meditate on its metaphors and meaning, that we may come very close to God and discover the Lord is our light and our salvation. Whom shall we fear? The Lord is a stronghold of our life. Of whom shall we be afraid? We shall see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. And that can be a very thin place for us, or it cannot be. But to be sure, it is a word that we can trust, for God will be with us. So my hope and my prayer for us as we continue the Lenten journey, as we continue out our calling together, that we will wait for the Lord, and He will be faithful to us all. Thanks be to God.